Before we begin our study this evening, I want to correct something that I said this morning. I said something to the effect that Moses was one of three that didn't see death. And Moses, we all know, died in Deuteronomy chapter 34 and was buried by the hand of God on Mount Nebo. My mind just didn't work quite right. We know that Elijah and Enoch did not see death. Two fellows, only fellows that I know that did not see death. Having said that, let's open our Bibles, if you would please, to the text of Numbers chapter 14. Numbers chapter 14. We've studied this in the past. In fact, in many lessons, we've talked about Joshua and Caleb. And we want to talk specifically tonight about Caleb. The text that we're looking at in Numbers chapter 14 reveals to us a time of disbelief among the people of Israel. I want to begin our reading in verse 20 of Numbers chapter 14. Jehovah said, I have pardoned according to thy word, but in very deed as I live, as all the earth shall be lifted with glory, the glory of Jehovah. Because all those men have seen my glory and my signs, which I wrought in Egypt and in the wilderness, yet have tempted me these 10 times and have not hearkened unto my voice. Surely they shall not see the land which I swear unto their fathers, neither shall any of them that despised me see it, but my servant Caleb, because he had another spirit with him and hath followed me fully. Him will I bring into the land whereunto he went, and his seed shall possess it. Continuing the reading in verse 29, he says, your dead bodies shall fall in this wilderness, and all that were numbered of you, according to your whole number, from 20 years old and upward, that have murmured against me, surely ye shall not come into the land, concerning which I swear that I would make you dwell therein, save Caleb the son of Jephunneh and Joshua the son of Nun. But your little ones that ye said should be a prey, them will I bring in, and they shall know the land which ye have rejected. But as for you, your dead bodies shall fall in this wilderness, and your children shall be wanderers in the wilderness 40 years, and shall bear the whoredoms until your dead bodies be consumed in the wilderness. We want to note in this that Caleb, the text tells us, would have an inheritance in the land because, as the text says, he followed me fully. And, of course, that's set in contrast to the unbelief of those of the nation of Israel. In Numbers chapter 32, we'll pick up the reading beginning at verse 11. Surely none of the men that came up out of Egypt from 20 years old and upward shall see the land which I swear unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob, because they have not wholly followed me, save Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, and Joshua, the son of Nun, because they have wholly followed Jehovah. And then if you turn over to the first chapter of the book of Deuteronomy, Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 36, Deuteronomy 1, verse 36, five beginning, it says, surely there shall not one of these men of this evil generation see the good land which I swear to give unto your father, save Caleb, the son of Jephunneh. He shall see it, and to him will I give the land, and that he hath trodden upon, and to his children, because he hath wholly followed Jehovah. Now, as we turn over to the book of Joshua, we know that Joshua is given the charge of leading the people into the promised land. And in Joshua chapter 14, beginning in verse 8, Joshua chapter 14, let's begin at verse 6. It says, then the children of Judah drew nigh unto Joshua in Gilgal, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite said unto them, thou knowest the thing that Jehovah spake unto Moses, the man of God, concerning me and concerning thee in Kadesh Barnea. 40 years old was I when Moses, the servant of Jehovah, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land. And I brought him word again, as it was in my heart. Nevertheless, my brethren that went up with me made the heart of the people melt, but I wholly followed Jehovah my God. And Moses sware on that day, saying, surely the land whereupon thy foot hath trodden shall be an inheritance to thee and to thy children forever, because thou hast wholly followed my God, Jehovah my God. Now notice these next couple of verses. And now behold, Jehovah hath kept me alive as he spake these 45 years. From the time that Jehovah spake the word unto Moses while Israel walked in the wilderness, and now, lo, I am this day 85 years old. How old is Caleb? He's 85. It says, as yet I am as strong this day as I was in the day that Moses sent me, and my strength was then, even so is my strength now, for war and to go out and to come in. Now therefore give me this hill country whereof Jehovah spake in that day, for thou heardest in that day how that Anakim were there, and cities great and fortified. It may be that Jehovah will be with me, and I shall drive them out as Jehovah spake. Now in verse 14, once again, therefore Hebron became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, unto this day, because that he wholly followed Jehovah, the God of Israel. Now, I read all these passages for a purpose. We won't read them every time that we reference them in the lesson, now that we've got them in front of us. But we want to note that repeatedly it is said concerning this man that he wholly followed God. He did what God said. He placed his trust and his confidence in God. He hath wholly followed me. Now, what does it mean to wholly follow the Lord? To do so fully, to do exactly what God said. Well, number one, we want to note that Caleb followed God all the days of his life. We note that he was 40 years old when Moses gave instruction to send the spies in. He was one of them. And now he said, I'm 85. So we see that a great lapse of time has taken place, and he's been faithful through that whole time. We're going to comment on that in the next side of this chart, but let us pause just here to note that not all folks do that. Some start and they don't finish. We note that the Israelites came up out of the land of Egypt. They saw the miracles, as the text tells us in Numbers chapter 14. They saw the great deliverance. They saw the things that God did that brought them up out of the land of Egypt. But when presented with the opportunity to go in and conquer the land, they said, we can't do that. And the Hebrew writer tells us in Hebrews chapter 3 the reason why they said that, because they didn't believe what God had told them. It was because of unbelief that they did not go in. When we looked in our study this morning, we talked about Lot's wife, how that Lot, because of some decisions that he made, he lost everything. He lost his wife, he lost his possessions, and all of those kind of things. When Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed, and he even lost his two sons-in-law who would not come out. Now, when we look at this, we see some start, but not everybody finishes. The Apostle Paul, writing to the Galatians, was much concerned about where they were. He had taught them a number of things. In fact, in chapter 1, verse 6, familiar passage, he said, I marvel that you're so quickly removing from him that called you in the grace of Christ unto a different gospel. Somebody had polluted their thinking, teaching these Christians of the churches of Galatia, especially those who were Gentiles, that you need to receive circumcision in order to be saved. Now notice the challenge that Paul sets forth in chapter 3, there beginning in verse 1. He says, O foolish Galatians, who did bewitch you, before whose eyes Jesus Christ was openly set forth crucified? What have they known? They have known that Jesus is the Christ. The testimony of those who were obviously witnesses of that, they've heard that. He has openly been set forth before you, crucified. You know that's so. So who has bewitched you into believing things that are not true? You'll note in verse, it's chapter 5, in verse 2 beginning. He said, behold, I, Paul, say unto you that if you receive circumcision, Christ will profit you nothing. Yea, I testify again to every man that receiveth circumcision that he is a debtor to do the whole law. And then in verse 7 he said, you were running well. Who hindered you that ye should not obey the truth? Somebody's messed up their thinking into believing something that is not true. So our point is a simple one. Many start, but not everybody finishes. Now, sometimes we mess up when we're when we're younger. The Apostle Paul was writing to the young preacher, Timothy, in 1 Timothy chapter 4, in verse 12, when he said, "Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example to them that believe in word and manner of life and love and faith and in purity." Young people, listen to that. Though you're young, you can serve the God of heaven wholly or fully, as we have on the board. You can do that while you're young. Timothy's called upon to do that and to be an example. But you know, sometimes when we get old, we think, well, we've served our time. Or maybe we think there's nothing more that we can do. And that's just wrong. The apostle writing to Titus said in chapter 2, verse 1, "But speak thou the things which befit the sound doctrine, that aged men be temperate, grave, sober-minded, sound in faith, in love, and patience. That aged women likewise be reverent in demeanor, not slanderers, nor enslaved to much wine, teachers of that which is good. That they may train the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be sober-minded, chaste, workers at home, kind, being in subjection to their husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed." You see, just because we become old doesn't mean there's nothing that we can do. And it doesn't mean that it's time just to quit serving the Lord. You know, there are folks that talk about when you get old, you retire. Well, you never retire from serving the Lord. You just don't. And as you'll notice in your text, in the Psalms 92, Psalms 92, I want to begin at verse 14. Psalms 92, verse 14. There the text tells us, verse 12 beginning, "The righteous shall flourish like a palm tree, he shall grow like a cedar in Lebanon. They are planted in the houses of Jehovah, and they shall flourish in the courts of our God, and they shall still bring forth fruit in old age. They shall be full of sap and green to show that Jehovah is upright. He is my rock, and there is no unrighteousness in him." Getting old is not a time to say, well, I'm done. I can quit. No, we can't do that. As you turn back to Psalm chapter 78, you might pick it up about verse 4 and note, "We will not hide from their children," telling to the generation to come the praises of Jehovah and his strength and his wondrous works that he hath done. What do we have a responsibility to do even as we grow older? We have a responsibility to the next generation to teach them the things that they need to know. So following the Lord all the days of our lives, that characterized Caleb. He had done that. 85 years old and he's still serving the Lord, still being faithful to the Lord. What else do we learn? What does it mean to wholly or fully follow the Lord? Well, that means that you follow him with all of your heart. Now, I know we read these passages and we say, well, that's just common knowledge. Verse 2, Psalm 119, "Blessed are they that keep his testimonies, that seek him with the whole heart." Verse 10, "With my whole heart have I sought thee, O let me not wander from thy commandments." You see that over and over. Verse 34 and so forth, 69, in Psalm 119 alone. We serve the Lord with the whole heart. You follow him with all of your being. But not everybody does that. When we read about Rehoboam, Rehoboam had a grand opportunity to follow in the instructions of his father Solomon. But he didn't do that. If you'll turn in your Bible to 2 Chronicles chapter 12. 2 Chronicles chapter 12. Let's begin reading at verse 1. 2 Chronicles, that's 1 Chronicles. 2 Chronicles chapter 12. Verse 1, it says, "It came to pass when the kingdom of Rehoboam was established, he was strong, that he forsook the law of Jehovah and all Israel with him." What did he do? Well, verse 14 continues to tell us. In that verse, it says, "He did that which was evil because he set not his heart to seek Jehovah." Well, who's he seeking to please? Well, when you're not seeking to please Jehovah, there's one other. You're seeking to please self generally. And that was the problem with Rehoboam. That became even his father's problem in 1 Kings chapter 11 and in verse 4. And it eventually became the problem of the southern kingdom of Judah in particular. Notice how Jeremiah worded it. And we know that they were following essentially what the northern kingdom had done. But as you turn to Jeremiah chapter 3, look at verse 10, where there the prophet says, Jeremiah chapter 3, verse 10, And yet for all this, her treacherous sister Judah hath not returned unto me with her whole heart, but feignedly, saith Jehovah. The southern kingdom of Judah not serving the Lord, not being faithful. And Jeremiah repeatedly talks about those things that would end in a very negative way for the kingdom of Judah. Now, by way of contrast, when Jesus was asked, what is the first and the greatest commandment? He said, it's this, to love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, soul, and mind. That's what it is. Now, that requires something of us. You recall this text, I'm sure most of you are familiar with it, John 14, verse 15. Jesus said, if you love me, you keep my commandments. You'll keep my commandments. Now, serving the Lord with the whole heart means you do what he says. Isn't that simple? But it also means that there's going to be some difficulties along the way, as we were talking about this morning. Then what decisions do you make when things are not well? Well, the Pharisees, they were serving the Lord during a time when they were under the thumb of Rome. But the Pharisees had become quite self-righteous. And in chapter 15, verse 18, verse 7 it is, chapter 15, verse 7, the writer says, ye hypocrites, well did Isaiah prophesy of you, saying, this people honoreth me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. But in vain do they worship me, teaching as their doctrines the precepts of men. Where was their heart? Well, it wasn't in wholly following the Lord. Well, where was it? Let's turn to a couple of passages. One is in John's account, John chapter 12, verse 42 beginning. John chapter 12, verse 42, and the other one is in John chapter 5. We'll look at that in just a moment. But in John chapter 12, verse 42, the text tells us, nevertheless, even of the rulers, many believed on him, but because of the Pharisees, they did not confess it, lest they should be put out of the synagogue, for they loved the glory of men more than the glory of God. Well, they were not interested in bearing up under burdens and hazards as we have on the board and difficulties of life to serve the Lord. No, we want to serve men and we want to receive the praises of men. In John, the fifth chapter, the fifth and sixth chapters are quite intriguing to me, as you well know. But if you'll back up into the fifth chapter, I'm not going to read all of it, but we note beginning in verse 30, Jesus says that my testimony does not stand alone. Because the testimony of just one does not bear the record to be accurate. It takes the testimony of at least two, maybe three witnesses. But he says in verse 33, that John, that is John the Baptist, hath borne witness unto the truth. And then he says, my Father has borne witness to the claims that he had made to be the Son of God by the miracles that he performed. And then you'll note, beginning in verse 39, he said, you search the scriptures because you think in them you have eternal life. And these are they which bear witness of me. But now drop down, if you will, to verse 44. He said, how can you believe who receive glory one of another and the glory that cometh from the only God you seek not? You see, the problem is they sought glory from one another, not from God. And so why would Jesus expect them to believe what Moses said when they seek the glory of men? That don't work too good, does it? Now, Jesus makes that vividly clear to them and calls them time and time again in Matthew 23, hypocrites because of the things that they did to be seen and approved of men. Now, what kind of things do we see that some did and some didn't do? You remember in back over in the book of Numbers in the 13th and 14th chapters when they came and spied out the land, and the report of 10 of the spies was, well, we can't take the land. Well, why not? Well, because you see, there are men of great stature that are there. There are giants in the land, and we can't do that. In verse 33, we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. Well, there's giants in the land. We can't conquer that land. And as you look at the 14th chapter with Joshua and Caleb affirming, yes, we can. Note the adversity that they faced. You'll note beginning in verse 6, it says, and Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, this is chapter 14, verse 6, who were of them that spied out the land, rent their clothes, and they spake unto all the congregation of the children of Israel, saying, the land which we pass through to spy it out is an exceeding good land. If Jehovah delight in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it unto us. A land which floweth with milk and honey, only rebel not against Jehovah. Neither fear ye the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their defense is removed from over them, and Jehovah is with us. Fear them not. But all the congregation bade stone them with stones, and the glory of Jehovah appeared at the tent of meeting and to all the children of Israel. You see, Caleb, along with Joshua, was willing to wholly serve the Lord, even though they were as grasshoppers in the sight of the people who inhabited the land. And Joshua and Caleb were willing to wholly serve the Lord when everybody else was not. They became the enemies of Joshua and Caleb and wanted to stone them to death. And sometimes age gets to be a factor, don't it? When we serve the Lord. What comes along with age? Well, we get old and cranky. Well, that's not what I'm talking about. What sometimes comes along with age? Well, we got health problems, don't we? Health problems raise their ugly head. And now, you see, I can't serve the Lord because I've got health problems. I know the realities of health problems, and you know that I do. But sometimes our so-called health problems become nothing more than a crutch, don't they? And keeps us from wholly serving the Lord. I admire, very much so, Harvey Rockwell was here this morning. Had a hard time walking, but he was here. I would dare say he was in pain. I would also dare say he probably didn't feel 100%, but he's here. Now Caleb, he says, I'm as strong as I ever was. And we've read that. Strong as I ever was. But most of us, when we get to be 85, we're not quite as strong as we ever were. You see, age begins to kind of take a toll, doesn't it? And we use that sometimes. Well, now where are we when we face challenges? Well, turn in your Bible to Matthew the 5th chapter, and let's read in the parable, or in the Beatitudes rather. Matthew the 5th chapter, reading beginning in verse 10. In Matthew the 5th chapter, verse 10. Blessed are they that have been persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are ye when men shall reproach you and persecute you and say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for so persecuted they the prophets that were before you. Again, our focus is on Caleb. Here he's got brethren that want to stone him. There's giants in the land. And he said, we can go take it. We can do this because God is with us. Now, Jesus is using folks like Caleb to illustrate the point. They persecuted the prophets that were before you. You served the Lord, even if it means persecution. Now, what else do we learn about Caleb? And what do we need to do to wholly or fully follow the Lord? Well, Chris and I have talked many, many, many times about how necessary it is to not be distracted by the things about us. To not be distracted. To be focused in our service unto the Lord. But you see, not everybody is so focused. Sometimes we are distracted by the things about us like Israel was when they looked at the giants in the land. That's all they could see is giants in the land. They had lost sight of the miracles that they had seen that God utilized to bring them up out of the land of Egypt. There's giants in it. Well, you can't go in there. Well, think about what God has already done. Do you think he can't do what he's told you he will do? Well, you see, foolishness sometimes gets involved in our decisions. And we note that the Hebrew writer cites this very instance in Hebrews chapter 3, and he tells us exactly why they did not go into the promised land. It was simply because they didn't believe God. In the third chapter, and in verse 12 beginning, the writer said, take heed, brethren, lest haply there shall be in any one of you an evil heart of unbelief in falling away from the living God. But exhort one another day by day, so long as it is called today, lest any one of you be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. For we are become partakers of Christ if we hold fast the beginning of our confidence firm unto the end. And then he uses this period of time of wilderness wandering to illustrate the unbelief of the nation of Israel when they were told to go in and take the land. Oh, we can't do that. There's giants in the land. We can't do it. Well, what's that evidence of? They'd lost sight of the things that God had already done for them. And they had lost sight of any anticipation of what God would do for them in the conquering of the land. We've got a problem. Now, where's Joshua and Caleb in this equation? Look, if you will, in chapter 13, verse 30 once again. Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and possess the land. Possess it, for we are well able to overcome it." We can do this. Now, dear brethren, do we not sometimes need somebody to just say, and somebody to just lead and say, "We can do this"? You ever get discouraged? Do you ever look at things about you that takes your focus off of the Lord and then take the position, "Well, we can't do this"? That's what the people said when they saw the giants in the land, when they saw some opposition. "We can't do it." Caleb said, "Yes, sir, we can. The Lord will be with us and we can conquer this land." That's what he said in the text of the 14th chapter. Now, what do we do? In our Hebrew study, we're going to be soon looking into the 11th chapter and then on into the 12th of the book of Hebrews. And in the 11th chapter, we see great heroes of faith. We talked about some of them in our study this morning. But as you pass on into the 12th chapter, in verse 1, the writer says, "Therefore let us also, seeing we are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God." Now look carefully at that passage. I know that we are familiar with these great heroes of faith in the 11th chapter, and we often cite them as examples of faith, and that's good. And I know that this audience is well familiar with the 12th chapter, where that we are compassed about with such a great cloud of witnesses. As we look around about us, we see the presentation of a Colosseum, and those who've already run the race, they're in the stands round about us, and now here you are. And they're cheering you on, saying, "We did it, you can too." But who's at the finish line? You see, the writer said, "Looking unto Jesus, the author and perfecter, finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God." Now, dear friends, when you look at that last expression, "He sat down at the right hand of the throne of God," here is the joy that was set before him. We might call it victory. That's what was set before him. Now, because he kept his eye on the victory, what did he do? It says that he despised or endured the cross, despising the shame. He kept his eye on the victory. Now, what do you do? Well, see, we can't afford to become distracted by the things of this life, the discouraging things, the things that affect the way that we think. Now again, when we look at Caleb, we see that he had a very useful life. He'd served the Lord for a long time, ripe old age, but not everybody does. We see in Numbers 13, the Israelites said, "We can't do this." We see in Hebrews chapter 3, "We can't do this." And the reason is, stated by the writer, you just don't believe what God said. We can't. We can't do this. And we take a defeatist attitude. We can't do that, brethren. We can't do that. If we want to lead a useful life, let's look at Caleb, who fully or wholly followed the Lord. What did he do? He became a leader of these people. He helped to lead them into the promised land. Yes, Joshua was the one selected by the Lord, but we know that Joshua and Caleb participated in this. He became an example of faith and courage. His attitude is, we can do this. Even though they wanted to stone him to death. And we read in the 14th chapter of Joshua how that at his ripe old age of 85, he's referring to what he has done, what he has accomplished, and becomes an inspiration to others. Now, what do we do? What do we do? Well, in 1 Timothy chapter 4, Paul had told Timothy to be an example among the believers. And in 2 Timothy chapter 2, beginning in verse 20, 2 Timothy chapter 2, reading beginning in verse 20, the writer said, "Now, in a great house, there are not only vessels of gold and silver, but also of wood and earth, some unto honor and some unto dishonor. If a man therefore purge himself from these, shall he shall be a vessel unto honor, sanctified, meet for the master's use, prepared unto every good work." Now, what do you want to be? Useful? Well, don't quit. Don't be distracted. Don't look at only the bad things. You see, there are bad things that exist in the world in which we live, but if that's all we can see. Now, I know sometimes when we're the object of mistreatment or something such as that, our focus is on that. But if that's all we can see, then we've got a problem. We don't lead a useful life when all we see and all we do and all we participate in are the bad things. But Caleb lived a very fulfilling life. Now you well know there are some that did not. King Saul in 1 Samuel chapter 13. He had started out as a good king, had he not? But in 1 Samuel chapter 13, you'll note that Samuel told him, "You wait here. I'll be back and offer a sacrifice." You remember that text? And we know that when Samuel got back, what did he find King Saul doing? He was offering the sacrifice. Well, there's lots of problems with that. First of all, Saul wasn't a priest. Samuel was. Saul was king, but he was not a priest. He was not authorized to offer the sacrifice. Samuel was upset with him because you presumed to do something you were not authorized to do. And Saul's explanation was, "You weren't hearing, so I forced myself to do that." No. No, what you did, Saul, was wrong. And then in 1 Samuel chapter 15, we know that Saul was instructed to go and smite Amalek and destroy all the Amalekites, everything that they had. But rather, he brought back the best of the Amalekites to offer a sacrifice unto the Lord. Now, my question to you is, how did King Saul wind up? It wasn't a very fulfilling life, was it? You recall how that he was being faced with the war with the Philistines, and God's not talking to him. And because God's not talking to him, he's concerned about what's going to happen when he faces the Philistines. And you'll also recall that the way Saul wound up was as Samuel told him, "You and your son's going to be with me today. You're going to die." And we know that King Saul fell on his sword and his sons were killed by the Philistines. Saul didn't have a very fulfilling life, would you say? He messed up and did so royally, and it ended with he and his sons killed on the same day. Saul by his own hand. Now, on the other side of the coin, Caleb lived a very fulfilling life. What did he do? Well, number one, he had the opportunity to enter into the promised land. He received his inheritance in the promised land. He had rest from war, dwelling in one of the choicest places of the promised land. Now, what do we do? Turn your Bible, if you will, to Ephesians chapter 3. I want to simply note the second prayer of the Apostle Paul on behalf of these Ephesians, the second, I should say, recorded prayer of the Apostle on their behalf. In Ephesians chapter 3, begin reading at verse 14. Paul says, "For this cause I bow my knees unto the Father, from whom every family in heaven and on earth is named, that he would grant you according to the riches of his glory, that ye may be strengthened with power through his Spirit in the inward man, that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith, to the end that ye, being rooted and grounded in love, may be strong to apprehend with all the saints what is the breadth and length and height and depth, and to know the love of Christ, which passeth knowledge, that ye may be filled unto all the fullness of God. What's Paul praying for on behalf of those Ephesians? Well, that they might fully follow the Lord. Well, just simply for selfish reasons? Well, no. But ultimately, that they might come to know God and come to know the fullness of God, that their life might indeed be fulfilled. We see essentially the same thing written by Paul in the Philippian letter in chapter 3 as he anticipated his heavenly reward. And we also see the Apostle Peter affirming the same thing in 1 Peter chapter 1, beginning in verse 3 down through about verse 8. Now, what do we learn from Caleb? What do we learn from Caleb? Well, we learn to fully follow the Lord. That is, to wholly follow him and to do that all the days of our life. And to do that with all of your heart. No matter what may come, don't be distracted by the things round about you. And why would you do that? So that you can live a useful life of service unto the Lord. You can have a life that is fulfilled and blessed by the Lord. Now, an interesting contrast to Caleb. In Numbers chapter 32, Israel did not enter Canaan. And the reason is, they have not wholly followed me. Didn't wholly follow me. Now in Hebrews chapter 3 we learn why. Because they didn't believe God. But what do we learn from Caleb? Caleb's attitude was, this is what God said. And because he said this, he'll fight our battles for us. We can do this. This is contingent upon what we know that God said. Caleb becomes an interesting study to me. To try to live better. He's not one of the most outstanding characters of the Old Testament. But he is one that teaches some valuable lessons. Maybe I'm talking to somebody tonight who would desire to begin their service to the Lord by fully serving him, becoming a Christian. That's a decision you can make tonight. You believe that Jesus is who he claimed to be. He is the Son of God. Would you repent of your sin, confess your faith, and be baptized tonight? Maybe you started that path, but you've not continued. Well, sometimes we fall into the same pitfalls of others, like the nation of Israel. Don't do that. Be faithful to him, just like Caleb, so that heaven can be yours. If you be subject to the invitation, please make your desires known while we stand and while we sing the song. Fruit.